Welcome to the next edition of Study Hall for Kubernetes Month with Cloud Security Podcast. Last week on Third Study Hall, we spoke about why Kubernetes is getting popular, why we feel it may be the next evolution or checkpoint in compute. We also spoke about what Kubernetes is not, and should you consider moving your infrastructure or compute infrastructure to Kubernetes. This week, we'll go into a bit more technical detail. Let's talk about why Kubernetes in the first place. Didn't we already have an existing technology? Is it something new? We'll talk about the components, and we'll also talk about Kubernetes architecture and extensions that you need if you're working with Kubernetes. So let's get into this. A good place to start talking about why Kubernetes was required is with Docker containers. For people who don't know what containers are, it's basically similar to virtual machine, but a much, much smaller version. And I would encourage you to Google it and find out a bit more about what containers are. Probably even look for Docker containers to find out examples for what are some of the things you could be looking out for. Now, traditionally, when you would have deployed a container, you would write one single command, Docker run, and that should help you deploy one container. Great, amazing, you can deploy an application. Now imagine if you have to write two or three or four. So basically you're writing that Docker command multiple times. And as you grow as an organization and you start deploying more applications on containers, you're developing this library of commands which are just doing the same thing but being run multiple times, different applications. And imagine in a structure of an organization where you have different languages, different kinds of applications, how do you manage an array of Docker containers that you just have across the fleet of your organization compute infrastructure? One solution to this was Docker Swarm, which is a solution that was provided straight by Docker themselves. And it was great, but it didn't really have the reliability or management around it. It wasn't mature enough. There were a couple of other solutions that came out for managing Docker containers. One of them was Kubernetes and the other one was Mesos. I'm not going to go into Mesos because this is not Mesos month, this is Kubernetes month. But as we pointed out in the last study hall, Kubernetes is an orchestration platform for managing your Kubernetes containers in a reliable fashion using the 15 years experience that Google has utilized in creating distributed systems across the globe, which is great. Now, since we know the problem that you're trying to solve is if you're trying to deploy multiple containers across multiple applications, different specifications, you can do it in a reliable fashion. Kubernetes would allow you to roll features in a specific container versus across your entire fleet or even across a small percentage. It does that automatically just through a single one-line command. Also allows you to roll back features if you want to find out, hey, something didn't work out, I want to roll back really quickly. You can do that one single command as well. It can also abstract the deployment of scale. So you know how in my example where I said if you have multiple Docker containers, you probably have to write that single Docker deploy command multiple times. In a Kubernetes container, you would probably just say, hey, or Kubernetes cluster rather, you would just define this as, I want this web application to be deployed across 1,000 replicas is the technical word for it. And as you do that, Kubernetes takes care of deploying those 1,000 replicas of that container across its cluster with just one single line. So you don't have to do that 1,000 times. Instead, you just do it once and you have a centralized API to manage all of that together. And Kubernetes abstracts all the necessary requirement for monitoring it, giving you information on the health of the pods or the containers that are running, and how often do you want them to come up, come down. However, the complex the problem is, there is a solution in Kubernetes, at least seems like. Kubernetes offers an open architecture which has support across all the major network providers, storage providers, and also gives you authentication, authorization, role-based access control. So quite a bit already comes with the open architecture and a lot of plugins, so your existing tools may already work with Kubernetes. It's supported on all public cloud providers right now. So whether it's Azure, AWS, or Google Cloud, all of them supported. All right, now since we understand the technical aspect behind why Kubernetes became popular soon after the popularity of containers and how it has become that next abstraction layer for containers, or at least a swarm of containers, now since we have that out of the way, let's go a bit deeper. Let's understand the components required to run Kubernetes. Kubernetes follows a server-client model, which, as I would remind you from part one, it's not the traditional client-server, but it is still the model where there is a master and there is a slave. I hate using those words for obvious reasons, but in this context, let's just say there is a server that has all the information that it needs for a Kubernetes cluster to maintain the state, and there is a client that follows the instruction for what state needs to be managed by the Kubernetes cluster. Now, traditionally, when you talk about server client, you probably want to talk about operating system, but I'm going to leave that for next week's study hall, where we'll go into a bit more security architecture kind of conversation. For the purpose of this episode, let's focus on some of the components of this client-server architecture as it relates to a Kubernetes architecture. Now, when people talk about a Kubernetes architecture, they're usually talking about Kubernetes cluster. Now, a cluster is a collection of nodes, and you wonder, what is a node? Well, let me explain. A node is a machine, a virtual machine, either physical or virtual, where you would be installing the Kubernetes software, and that's where all your applications are going to be hosted. Now, imagine a situation if you only had one node. Imagine one rectangle with called node with Kubernetes software in there. And if something happens to that virtual machine, basically, if that node goes down, your application goes down. So you probably want to have multiple nodes at any given point in time for high availability. Now, this is great. We have multiple nodes. We have been able to scale the application, and we're able to serve high volume traffic. Now, high volume traffic is good, but as you all know, for running an application, over time, you may want to deploy changes, you may want to change the state of the containers, or in this context, the smallest node changes that may require someone to manage those changes. Someone may need to tell all these nodes who the other nodes are who are hosting the same application, or maybe even monitor them for their health status, or just the fact that there is a new change coming in. This is where the server comes in. Now, server, or some people may call it the Kubernetes master, it is known as the server or the master because it has the control plane components installed. Now, a control plane component is an important part of the mothership, the Kubernetes server or Kubernetes master, depending on how you look at it. There are a few elements or services that make up the Kubernetes control plane. The first one I would start off with is the API server. This is the interface point, or for lack of a better word, a cluster gateway that helps interaction between the node, the master, or the server, and it is the location which would let the node find out what the state should be, what application, what Docker container, what deployment should be managed. Another important component of a server node is also called etcd, etcd. So E as in Echo, T as in Tango, C as in Charlie, and D as in Delta. Now, this is the key value store, which holds the state information for what a cluster should be holding, what resources are available, did the cluster state change, is the cluster healthy, should there be a new pod. Now, talking about new pods, there is a component also called scheduler. Scheduler decides which node should our pod be running in. Now, pod is a component inside the node, which we didn't cover, but essentially, it's the smallest element inside a node, and a node can have multiple pods in it. Now, if I've confused you with node, pod, and scheduler, then bear with me for a few more minutes, and this would all collectively make sense in the recap. So what is a scheduler? A scheduler is a component where you're trying to decide, if I have a service available, and if I have a node which is not doing anything right now, it's a scheduler which would send the command for, hey, Mr. Node or Ms. Node, you are not doing anything, so I want to maintain efficiency and I want to use all my hardware, so I'm going to give you an application to deploy. Otherwise, you should not exist. That's what a scheduler would do. Another component on this master node or server node is called a control manager. This, some people call it as the brains of the operation for a cluster platform, where the Kubernetes cluster is being monitored by the control manager. This is the component that would work with the scheduler to tell another node about, hey, what do you need to be running or what you should not be running. Now, last but not least, the component that I would also like to cover is a container runtime. This is the container runtime, for lack of a better word, this is the stack that helps Kubernetes do all the orchestration and interaction with the container elements of the nodes. So traditionally, it used to be Docker Shim, which as of December 2020 has been deprecated in version Kubernetes 1.20. What does this mean for you? Well, it doesn't really change anything apart from the fact that you still have a container runtime. It just would be not a Docker shim. It would just be a container runtime, which is called a container runtime interface. CRI is what people are calling it. That's what you need to be aware of. Now, we have the components of the server covered. Let's talk about the node, or the worker node as Kubernetes would like to call it. We spoke about the node, we spoke about the application. Now, is this application just willy-nilly hanging around in Kubernetes worker node? Not really. It's hosted on something called a pod. Now, pod is a container inside a node. So if I were to draw this in a picture, and imagine I've got two boxes, one for my server or my master, and the second one for my client or my worker. In the master, we spoke about the components like the API server, the scheduler, the control manager, etcd, and container runtime. In the node itself, which is basically talking to this master or mothership, it would have its own components. The smallest component in there, apart from the Kubernetes software and tools that have been installed, would be something called a pod. Now, pod is a container itself. This is where you would use a pod definition to tell the cluster, hey, cluster, this is a node, and this is the pod definition for what needs to be deployed in a pod. And you can lay the blueprint out in something called a deployment definition, which is what defines what a pod would have. There are other components as well in a worker node or in a client scenario, but I would just call out kubelet is probably the most important one. It is an internal process which runs as an agent in each of the node, and it talks to the API server, and it's basically that component's job to maintain the interaction between the API server on the master node or the server and the client. All right, now since we have the client-server model laid out properly, let's talk about some of the other components you may have to use when you're trying to deploy an application. Storage. Now, Kubernetes doesn't have storage by default, so you need to add elements such as storage class for you to be able to access either a local storage. You can totally define a pod and have it run as a database. I would not recommend that, but you may choose to put a database in a container. But if you were to do that, you probably are going to have a slow application. But, you know, if it works for you, it works for you. So you may define a storage outside. Let's call it a remote storage. And as we define this, we're kind of moving back into the whole world of virtual machines for people who are from that era, where we started using virtual machines and sharing drives between our local machine and also the machine in the containers. This may not sound important right now, but when we talk about the security elements next week, you'll realize suddenly all these things start appearing as security gaps depending on the architecture that you're going with. Another important component when looking at a cluster, we've defined a cluster would have a master and a worker, or a client and server. It also has something called a namespace. You would say that name being thrown around quite often. Now, namespace is a logical separation of a Kubernetes cluster, and there are certain default cluster namespaces that you would get when you install Kubernetes, but you can choose to define your own. So you may use to define, say, logical separation between a database namespace and a monitoring data namespace. So you may have one Docker, and you may have one database and pod and something else, and you can define this. Okay, this is my compute namespace and this is my database namespace. So no matter where the cluster is hosted or where the application, they can all talk to the same namespace. Now, these are just some of the components that we have covered in a Kubernetes cluster. There are a lot more, and there are some add-ons as well that you may have to consider, which we would go into the next week. For example, Istio, Envoy. There's a lot of these words that are thrown around, and you may wonder, why do you need this? And the simple answer to this is, as we spoke about in our last study hall from last week, Kubernetes doesn't have all the components that you would expect for an application. For example, storage, which we just spoke about. There are other components similarly. If you have multiple clusters that they want to talk to each other, you would use something like an Istio. Similarly, Envoy, and there are Prometheus for monitoring. There are quite a few other components that are used as add-ons. I would definitely encourage reading into some of those so you could get a better idea. Now, let's quickly do a recap of what this would look like if you were to zoom out and look at this episode once again. If you have not understood anything that I've said so far, the one or maybe the two components that I would ask you to look into is look into what a Kubernetes cluster is, look into something called Kubernetes API, and also look at something called kubectl, which I didn't mention, but essentially that's like a command line interface into an API of the Kubernetes server that you're looking at. So you may use Kubernetes kubectl, as people might call it. They don't really call it kubectl. Kubectl is a command line interface for you to interact with the API server and deploy the replicas that we were talking about at the beginning of this episode. And I will definitely encourage you to check out the components for the server, which is the heart of the current cluster. Now, there is a lot of best practice that people recommend for deploying Kubernetes. And as you now understand, there's a cluster, there's a master server, or there's a node, which is a worker as well. You may want to consider that an ideal best practice, if you have heard the last weekend's episode with Mark Manning, an ideal structure for a cluster should be one cluster is isolating a complete business unit, or it's isolating a complete application. Now, you may choose the other path, but the simple truth is it's easier to manage distributed systems in Kubernetes. That's why you've moved into Kubernetes. So you should allow yourself the liberty to have a lot more distributed systems than more, I guess, dependent systems that we have been used to in traditional models. So more microservices, more containers, and more distributed systems. All right, that's pretty much what I had for this episode. And I would leave the Medium article that I've been creating, because I totally understand some of this would not make sense without a diagram. So I'm going to add the Medium article on to this show notes. You should be able to go there and at least check out the first part article as well as this part's article, including a diagram which talks about some of these components that we've spoken about. So you can go out and Google. Our intention is by the end of this Kubernetes month, at least you are aware of the basic terminology for Kubernetes, what you should be looking for, and what you can talk about to other people about to learn more. If you find any value from this free information that we are sharing based on our research over here, I would appreciate it, and the team would appreciate it, if you hit the follow or subscribe button, depending on what podcast platform you're listening in from. Feel free to follow our social media channels as well. It may not seem like a lot, but it also shows us support from your side and helps us get guests that are popular in the space, so they are able to kind of validate, hey, this is my platform worthwhile going into, because I've got this community which wants to learn about cloud security, wants to learn about Kubernetes security, and anything that's going in that space. If you have a friend who's trying to learn Kubernetes, this could be a good episode to introduce them to as well, or introduce them to the previous study hall episode. We have a Kubernetes tab going on our website as well, which you can direct them to. But if they find it valuable, I would appreciate if you or your friend can leave us a review. It means a lot when folks leave a review, because that helps us let our future guests know that we are worth coming on the platform. So thank you so much for helping us grow. And if you are joining us on the weekend live stream, and if you do want to participate in our live stream and ask a question directly to the guest coming in, feel free to head to your popular video platform, whether it's LinkedIn, if you follow the Cloud Security Podcast page over there, feel free to head to YouTube. Those are the two major platforms where we are streaming to, but we also stream to Twitter in case you are someone who enjoys Periscope. I hope you have a safe rest of the week, and I'll talk to you over the weekend. Thank you for listening to that episode of Cloud Security Podcast. If you found some new information from that episode, we would appreciate if you share it with others. Share it with us as well if you have any good feedback or good learnings from the episode. We are on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you don't find us there, you can always go on our website, www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv, to listen to the latest episode. We appreciate your support in helping us grow. It helps us bring more guests. It helps us support the channel. So really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and talk to you on the next episode.